Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidevishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. So first adhyaya, para two. Overview of Adhikaranas. The word mano maya refers to Brahman, 1-8. The eater is Brahman, 9-10. The associate in the cave of the heart is Brahman, 11-12. The person in the eye is Brahman, 13-17. The antayami is Brahman, 18-20. Akshara is Brahman, 21-24. Vaishvanara is Brahman. The second part of the first adhyaya deals with further passages in which the indications of Brahman are not distinct. Right? So these are terms which are used, which are indicating Brahman in the Veda. But then the problem is that other schools of thought interpret these terms differently. They don't see that this is the Supreme Lord. Right? So what we're trying to do is establish that all these aspects are the Lord. Because if they're the Lord, then that means He's the source of everything. He's the basis of everything. He's what makes everything work. Right? Because otherwise, if we're dealing with this... Vivartavad, right? Illusion? Yeah. So if we're dealing with Vivartavad, then that means anything you can perceive must be illusion. So they'll also take all these words, Manamaya and everything else, they're all illusion. So they can't be transcendental. So they're trying to say is transcendental is something beyond. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a furtherance of, you can say, the last part of the last adhyaya. Right? The first was just establishing then the position of inquiring about the transcendence, then the, how you say, the transcendence is the source of everything. Shastra is defining all this like this, and then it goes on to go into terms. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So Adhikarana 1. The Lord is famous everywhere. Sarvatra prasiddha adhikaranam. Sutra reference 1-2, 1-8. Adhikarana Prakashika. To commence the discussions of the Adhikarana, Baladeva Vidyabhushan prays, Mano mayad hibhi shabdhai swarupam yasya kriyate hridaye spurato sriman mama sau shamasundaraha. May Sri Shamasundara, whose form is glorified by words like mano maya, appear in my heart. Adhikarana 1 shows that the being which consists of mind, mano maya, whose body is breath, prana, sharira, etc., enjoined to be meditated upon in the Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1-2, is not the individual soul but Brahman. This Adhikarana is very important, in that it contains many sutras speaking of the difference between Brahman and Jiva. Shankara will add to his usual explanation that all this difference is to be understood as unreal, and only due to the false limiting adjuncts of the highest self. Does that make sense? So he just has the same philosophy. So it's not that they're going to come up with something new. Right? Summary of Adhikarana 1. Vishaya. In the Chandogya Upanishad it is said, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is Brahman. Mano Maya Prana Shariro Bha Rupa Satya Sankalpa. It is understood by the mind. It is the controller of all life. Shamshaya, do the adjectives in this passage, beginning with Manomaya. Describe the jiva, the paramatma, right? So same old. You can see as it gets old really fast, right? So we have a whole another adhikarna of dealing with this, right? Purvapaksha, the words mana and prana are here appropriate describe the jiva. The Mundaka Upanishad 2.1.2 explains, aprano hyamana subra. The splendid supreme person has neither breath nor mind. Because this passage from the Chandogya Upanishad contradicts the description of the Supreme Lord in this way, it should be understood to refer to the jiva, right? So, in other words, they take certain ones that support their philosophy, that's where they focus. So it's not that they can see the philosophy in everything, it's that they have to adjust everything to certain sutras. Does that make sense? So anything that talks about the oneness or about how he has no qualities, those will be their sutras. Right? So the same, sarvam kalvidah brahma, then they'll be, you say everything is Brahman. So that's important, but they don't see that everything's Brahman means also what they call illusion also is Brahman. So actually they don't follow their own Mahavakya. Right? So we see is that in the last, how do you say, two cantos, Prabhupada's used this term many, many times. He's quoted this from the Chandogya, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, many, many times. Because everything's Krishna. Krishna's everything. Paramatma's extended into everything. All his energies are in everything. So he is everything. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Siddhanta. Srila Vyasadeva responds in the following sutra, Sarvatra Pasiddho Padeshat. The word prana should be understood to refer to Brahman because of the context of its use. Sutra 1128. Sarvatra prasiddho pare shat.
It should be 1-1, right? Sutra 1-1.
1-1 means?
I mean, first of there, second. Yeah, second
one
part.
1-28.
Yeah, this is 1-1. Again, referring to the previous part.
No, I think that's...
No, it just means that the second one and the two got switched.
I think that's...
It's supposed to be 1-2-1.
No, but here, see what happened, should be 9. So 1-2-2. Where's 1-1-1?
This should be 1-2-1. So what happens is the 2 and the 1 got switched, and then the 8 there is because this is from the previous one. Sutra reference 1-2-1-8. So they may have just taken that and put it over here, and then something went funny with the computer. Right? Well, actually, it's not funny. It's supposed to do that, right?
Yeah.
If it does default. Not confuse, then how is it a confuser?
Yes. You got it in the default setting. 1-1-20-28.
Okay. Sarvatra, everywhere, prasiddha, celebrated, upadeshat, because of the teaching. The word manomaya refers to Brahman, because teachings of these qualities, which belong to the Lord, are found everywhere in the scriptures. Right? So it's not that it's just come up here. Right, it's being discussed because everywhere in scriptures it describes this aspect. But as we're seeing is that they'll take these points and then use them in their own way just to say that this is talking about the jiva. So they're trying to get rid of anything that has qualities. That's their whole purpose. Because once they get rid of everything with qualities, then you're left with nothing. And hence Buddhism, right? Sutra Prakashika. The impersonalists claim that the Supreme Brahman is devoid of qualities or characteristics, and therefore lacking such anthropomorphic qualities as mind or breath. right? So you have the aspect is that when we say that, you know, God has these qualities, that has qualities, then we see the Mayavadis themselves, and also your you know, atheists and all that will say, oh, this is anthropomorphic, right? You're just taking your own position and then overlaying that onto God, right? And they'll always say that's the way it has to be done. But they can't acknowledge or accept or understand that actually it's the other way around. Because God is here, he has qualities, he has form, therefore he's come like this. Does that make sense?
That means basically they are trying to be Aropita, but it is the other way around. Krishna is Aropita on us.
Yes, means everything's coming from Krishna. Mm. But they're trying to... See, the point is because they feel they're the center of everything, therefore when you're saying this, you're just doing the same thing they are, but you're projecting that God's like us, rather than, no, God's the center and we're like him. Just naturally we're inferior. Therefore, our sense is that we become controlled by the material energy. He doesn't. That keeps him in his transcendental position. That's why he's unchanging. He doesn't get changed by the material energy. We do. Right? So whatever we associate with, we get attached to. Right? That's the whole point. You work with something, you get attached to it. Krishna's not like that. He doesn't get attached. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we're trying. That's what we're dealing with, is that we get attached. That's why then we're so careful about our association and everything, because whatever you deal with, you get attached to that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. How to get beyond this attachment. Yeah. So they don't know how to do this without just negating everything, because they don't understand the Supreme Person. Therefore, then you could take it beyond, where that Supreme Person, he being transcendental, if we connect with him and associate with him, we become transcendental. They think, no, I'll just give up the material, that way I'll become transcendental. So that's very hard work. Right? Yeah. Thus, when the Upanishads mention words like manomaya and prana sharira, the detractors claim that this must necessarily refer to the jiva, for they match the jiva's description, not Brahman's. That's their position. In this sutra, the Sutrakara denies the argument by showing how this Shruti is replete with descriptions of God's qualities. Sri Baladev then demystifies those scriptural passages, which supposedly show that the Supreme is without prana or mind, and reveals their true purport. Manomayaha is the Lord who is the Lord, quote, who is known to the mundane mind and knowable only to the who is unknown to the mundane mind and knowable only to the pure mind, end quote. And the modern politically correct position is known to the mundane mind and unknowable to the pure mind. Okay. Or actually, couldn't care less by the purified mind. Right? And pranashara means, quote, embodied in the total life energy, end quote. Hence, manomaya is not the jiva, it is the controller of the total prana, which gives life to the senses of all beings. Sri Govinda Basya. In the first pada, it was stated that one should inquire about the Supreme Brahman, called the Supreme Person, from whom all universes arrive. Vedanta Sutra 111-2. Certain words which generally mean something elsewhere, shown to indicate... Certain words which generally mean something else were shown to indicate Brahman. In the second and third padas, other words which do not seem to clearly indicate Brahman are shown to indicate Brahman. The following is found in the Sandila Vidya section of the Chandogya Upanishad. Sarvam kalvidam brahma tajjalan iti shanta upasita. Mano maya prana shariro bharupa satya sankalpa saat mantar hridaya etad brahma. Everything is Brahman. The peaceful person should worship Brahman as the creator and destroyer. The worshipper then develops faith. As a person develops according to his faith in this world, so he attains in the next life. One should cultivate faith that Brahman is understood by the mind, manomayaha. He is the controller of prana. He is effulgent, and his every desire is fulfilled. He is all-pervading, performs attractive pastimes, and is endowed with all enjoyment, all fragrance, and all rasa. He encompasses everything. He is silent. He is the support. That Brahman is in the heart. Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1.2. So we can see is that when we understand properly the meanings of the words, then the Vedas very clearly are identifying the Supreme Person. Yes?
Manomaya is one of the portions?
And here it's referring to something is different. Here he gave the definition of...
Yeah, that's knowable to pure mind.
Yes. Because manomaya means what is known by the mind. So when we say position of manomaya, then we're getting information from the mind, but it's not a direct thing. It's a perceived thing, but it's not a direct acknowledgement. Does that make sense? So in other words, the example is given that when you're sleeping in the morning, I can ask you how you slept. But technically, if you're asleep, how do you know how you're sleeping? But you can say. That's manomaya. That's how you say, that would be the paroksha. You're by experience, you're getting the thing. So that's why then the Vedic system, the Varnashram system, by experience you can you can appreciate it. But you do it properly, then you can appreciate it. You know, in the application, you can experience it. That makes sense. Well, then Vijnanamoy, at that point, then you have that. How you say? Then you can actually see it, intellectually see it. You can see it. You can experience it directly. Does that make sense? Okay. Because what's happened there, the Lord has descended into that. So then by his grace, when you can perceive the Lord, then you can see how the Lord is in everything. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that's what's important. Yeah. Okay, so you see is that he gave here just the first parts of each of these verses. Right? With all the dots, but you see the translations much because covering more. Otherwise, it would have been so many words. Shamshai, here is the doubt. Is the object described by qualities like manomaya, the jiva, or the Lord? Purvapaksha, it must be the jiva since mind and pranas belong to the jiva. These are not present in the paramatma. Aprano hyamana. Subra, the Lord is without pranas or mind and is pure. Mundaki Upanishad 2.12. Right, so this is the interesting part. They're saying about the Paramatma. Now they're putting him into the position where he doesn't have all these things. Right? When they're trying to point out the jiva. Well, at the same time as they'll say Paramatma is just a manifestation of the mode of goodness. Right? You know, so they're going to establish his position and then go beyond. Right? So he remains in that position. They're the ones that actually attain to the transcendental position. That's their idea. Okay. So we see is that you know, anything that'll support their philosophy they'll take. In this statement Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, at the beginning of the passage one should not take the word Brahman to mean Supreme Brahman. It is a means of creating peacefulness, which is useful in worship. One is instructed to think of everything as Brahman in order to become peaceful. Since the words in the passage describe the jiva, the word Brahman at the end of the passage, Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.4, also means jiva. Right? So they're saying, because you're talking about qualities, then it must be the jiva. So therefore, at the end, when it says he encompasses everything, He is the support. It must also mean the jiva. Right? So it's just they're overextending their, you know, how you say, example. Siddhanta, sarvatra prasiddho pareshat, The word manomaya here refers to the Paramatma, because in this passage, the famous attributes of the Paramatma are as taught everywhere in the Vedanta literature are described.
Here, Panchanga Nyaya more or less is three elements of the principle. Why we always shift to Siddhanta immediately?
Because here it's just, in other words, they're saying their thing, we're saying our thing.
So it's like dialogue?
Yes, so it's like a dialogue. Like that. So it makes it easier. Because the way he does it, it's so concise. It gives, I mean, he makes his point. His reason, his point, everything like that is like all condensed into one. So you could break the Siddhanta down if you want. But it's done. So they're having their doubt, they're giving their reason, and then their examples. Mm-hmm. So they're having their complete, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, the sense theirs isn't going to actually get to Siddhanta. That's why theirs only deals with the first three. Mm-hmm. Right, we've opened with ours, you know, and our reasons, then they've given them, but then we're the only ones that are going to get to Upanaya and what's it?
Nigamana.
Like that. So that's why then it works there. So then taking theirs and then putting it into ours, then that's done in the Siddhanta.
That's Balde Vidyabhushan?
Yes. So it's just that this seems to be the method. I'm not even sure that Vyasadeva, when he's going through, that he doesn't use these terms.
He's using Uttara.
Uttara.
Uttara, and then last, when we get the conclusion, he says it's Siddhanta.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Then...
That we used it in the last Pada, you know. We're doing that, like, Purapaksha.
Yes.
And then Uttara, again Purapaksha, Uttara, that was going on.
Okay.
We gave the Siddhanta.
Okay. Yeah. Manomaya refers to the Paramatma, not the Jiva. Why? Because teachings concerning famous qualities unique to the Lord, such as His being the cause and destruction of the universe, stated everywhere in the Vedanta, are found in the phrases like Taj Jalan in the passage. Though the introductory phrase Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma is for the purpose of creating peacefulness, it is not meant to define Brahman primarily. Brahman is indicated by the words starting with Manomaya. Krato means worship, right? So the same principle that it creates peacefulness is because if you see everything as Brahman, then you don't have to worry about trying to enjoy or doing something with it or gaining some benefit from it. So, yeah. Manomaya means he who is comprehended by the pure mind. For Shruti says, Manasaiva. Nu drashtavya. The Lord is to be perceived by the mind. Right? So we're saying that the Lord Himself descends onto the platform of Adhoksija, right? The Vijnanamaya platform, because that's where the realization is. So that's what makes it work. But by the purified mind, you can understand His position down on Manomaya. He'll extend down to Manomaya with the purified mind. Right? So in other words, on the transcendental position of understanding the qualities of the Lord and how He's beyond the material energy, and how He's but at the same time how He is the one who is the source of everything, the primary element of everything, right? The original cause of everything. That you get on Vijnanamaya. But now when you get down into Manomaya, that's knowledge. But with a purified mind, then that can be appreciated. How do you purify the mind? Then it's through the process of we see as activities being done without attachment. Right? Because we can see is that this Vijnanamaya is not understood by the karmis. Right? Because the mind is not purified enough. Why? Because they perform the appropriate activities. But in performing those activities, there's attachment. Does that make sense? While if they perform those activities without attachment, then they can get purified. That'll bring them to the Vijnanamaya platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing that they're trying to... That is being brought out here. So he comes to there, he'll extend down to there. Now... what's in anamoy and pranamoy, that you have to bring up and connect to manamoy. You understand? That's how then you get everything connected. It's not that he extends all the way down. That's the whole point. Sense gratification, unless you take it up and connect it to him. But where is the connection made? At manamoy, which means, what are your duties? So connecting the senses and the sense objects to Krishna, then it has to be through the duties. Right? Mm-hmm. What are our duties? That's how we connect. Then we get the realization. Yes?
So, am I correct in understanding that the intelligence defines the level of consciousness and then the mind acts, directs it through to the senses and where the intelligence is? Is that correct?
It means we're using intelligence, but consciousness is beyond. Because consciousness you can either use in the transcendental or on the material. So with spiritual intelligence, yes, then one can understand the spiritual consciousness. But with material intelligence, you can't understand. So one has to make the distinction. So when the intelligence is purified, you are using the pure intelligence, then we can work with the pure mind. Then we can function on the transcendental position. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then what happens is that if the mind's not purified, then our decisions are going to be mundane. Right? Does that make sense? So we can see is the actual real purification is coming, giving up karma and gyan. Because otherwise they're understanding to some degree with gyan. But until they come to the actual position. So the actual way you can understand the Supreme Person is going beyond karma and gyan. But there must be action, right? Otherwise, how do you get Krishna karma? Right? Krishna karma means you're performing the activity, but the result is for Krishna. Right? You know, for us, what we call karma, karma is the results of our endeavors. So, when the result of the endeavor is for Krishna, we call it Krishna karma. That's why we say, because it's for him and it's his result, then he does as he likes with it, what he sees best. That's why then the reactions to what we're happening is not necessarily according to exactly what we performed. Right? We can perform less, you know, I mean, how you say, less, you know, on the way of doing things to get good results and get better results. Or we could have performed more on the way of improperly performed and still get less reaction. Does that make sense? So that's how Krishna karma is working. We're always taking it, the Krishna karma. It's us. We did the work and now Krishna's playing. No, but because it's for Krishna, it's his result. It's not our result. That's why then one's not under the laws of karma. Because you performed a transcendental activity, the result it's gotten is not within in the modes of nature. It's within transcendence. Therefore, it's up to Krishna what happens. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Really good? Doesn't make sense.
No, it does, but doubts are there.
Doubts are there. I see. What are these doubts?
Because it means, from what we just said, that to be able to function on the level of Krishna karma, you should be about the gunas.
No, it says that you're doing your work
trying
to do it to please Krishna. So that work being done to please Krishna, the results of that work are above the modes.
And how we end up...
The point is we're not necessarily steady in that. See, it's what we have to catch is that it's not that it's just a certain grade all the way along. When we say it's mixed devotional service, means sometimes it's pure and sometimes it's not. Because devotional service is pure. So you have the pure devotional service, then you have something mixed with it. So we're doing it to please Krishna, but at the same time we're maintaining material attachment. So that means there's the devotion is pure, but it's mixed. So therefore, that's why we don't call that pure devotion. Because we're taking the whole package. Right? If I take pure milk and put it into a glass, right? And then I take ink and pour it into the glass, we'll call it mixed. But it's ink mixed with pure milk. You understand?
The result is also quite mixed.
The result's mixed because we're looking at the forms that we'll gain from the endeavor. Right? In other words, let's say I cook for Krishna. So, cooking means you're using a form, you're going to get a form. One form will transform into something else, right? So I'm worried about that end result. Now I give it to Krishna, but there's some attachment to that end result. So now that I've done it for Krishna, I get the transcendental benefit of having cooked for Krishna. But then according to my attachment to that result, then I will be getting a result accordingly. You understand? So we're getting the spiritual benefit, but we're also getting, because we focus on the secondary, therefore we're going to get some kind of a reaction within the secondary. Like eating too much or something. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. Or we're not paying attention because we're so absorbed in the taste, but not seeing that the taste is Krishna, therefore we're not Krishna conscious at that time. But we're taking prasad, so we're getting purified. But how much more it would be if we understood as Krishna. You understand? So, therefore, at any stage, we're able to perform devotional service. And we're getting that benefit. But the point is because of the mix, we get distracted by the secondary. Because engaging the senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. So the senses are engaging in what? They're not engaging in direct. They're engaging in the secondary. Right, so the point is it's the consciousness that's on the platform of the primary. Our senses being engaged in action is on the platform of the secondary. So pure devotional service means that the focus is just on the primary. So use of the secondary is not for our own benefit; it's simply for Krishna's benefit. So at that point, you don't make a distinction between the primary and secondary. Because they're one. Right? We only make a distinction when we're talking about the mixed devotional service. Because then the primary and secondary aren't necessarily fully one. So there is the aspect of doing it for Krishna, so the primary is correct. But at the same time, is there some benefit we want to get from it? So then that benefit, or what we call the karma part, means we get the transcendental benefit from doing the service, so that's going to that will remain and that will build up, right? And as that develops, then we'll get more and more, advanced in devotional service. But because of the secondary, that's where our reaction will lie, because we're attached to something, then things won't work necessarily out all ideally, right? Sometimes they do, and then we're more inspired in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we're getting too but then we get too inspired by the secondary, and so then that's when Krishna starts putting problems, right? Because the point is if we're more advanced, when there's problems with the secondary, it doesn't bother us. It just reminds us more of Krishna. But when we're less Krishna conscious, then those obstacles bother us. But the idea is then we should surrender to Krishna. But we're thinking, no, if that all goes nicely, then that will be ideal. But the point is it going nicely just distracts us more and more from Krishna. So therefore, Krishna puts something in the way. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
So then, following this trail of thought, this is where we get the difficulty that we think we have to change the mechanics and the forms. Because
yes.
We actually don't see that the mechanics and the forms can be used in the right way.
Yes, yes. That's why generally the neophyte, because he puts all the emphasis on the forms, that's devotional service. Then depending upon, let's say, for one individual, or that individual and their, quote-unquote, group of everybody, right? Then whatever form they do, when they come to the temple, what they do when they come into the temple, how they offer obeisances to Prabhupada in the temple, how much they talk in the temple, where they stand in the temple, how much they get involved in everything in the temple. they'll consider that's the standard of devotional service, and if you're different from that, then you're not actually properly absorbed. Either you're too fanatic or you're not actually well situated. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole point, is that the second, like you're saying, the secondary will be taken as the primary. But it's the consciousness while that's being done. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. And so that's what you can't see. The person comes into the temple and it's quite full. And there's a lot of devotees standing in front of Prabhupada. So just as they come in the door, they offer obeisances in the corner to both Prabhupada and the deities. Then they get up and kind of position themselves out of the way. Then someone else who, of course, notices all these things, because in secondary devotional service, this is the primary, so they will be noticing that more than the holy name and the deities. Then they're in Prabhupada, they're going to notice that, and, oh, these guys aren't very serious. Why aren't they offering obeisance to the Prabhupada? He's the finest. Hey, this, now, blah, blah, blah. You're right, like that. But the point is they didn't want to go over there and bother. Or they come over there because it's something and just the obeisance doesn't go. Why didn't they do full dandabats? You know, I mean, it's just whatever you do, it's going to be wrong. Because it's about the secondary. Right? So that's why there's recommendations, what is the standard, and then you, as much as possible, according to the situation, apply that. Otherwise, we'll create our own standards. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. You know, it's just like, let's say we're in the ISKCON restaurant and they don't let you eat with your fingers because Karmis don't eat with their fingers, though half of what Karmis eat, especially in the more modern kind of content, in most of it they eat with their fingers. But you're not allowed to eat it with your fingers because Karmis don't eat with their fingers. You know what I'm saying? So stuff like that, they'll make up their own rules. Like that. So, does that make sense? Yeah.
When you say that one, Shravapat many times says that we should judge by the result.
Judge by the result.
The result will reflect the consciousness that was proven.
Yes. Means, yes. The point is that someone's inspired in Krishna consciousness, that's what you're looking for. But because we're looking at secondary, therefore we say these things that Prabhupada's given, these others have given, or what's doing, these can't work because I don't do it like that, so therefore I'm not able to get result in a more direct Krishna conscious way. So therefore they try to make their adjustments and everything like that. Yeah. But that's why it's the society, you get inspired, it means you can't do it. Then you look at what someone else can do. But now false ego is so great, it's that I can't do it, it can't be done. Like I mentioned before, 60s, 70s, when one temple figured something out, it wasn't that the others, no, we can do that better. No, it's just they all did it. Like I remember when someone first figured out how to distribute a big book, that was, I think it was, what's his name? Not Baba Bhuti. Can't remember. It's with, huh? It's with a B. Bhuti Manta. Yes. First one to distribute a big book. No one had ever done it. That was like, you know, shockwaves through ISKCON. And, wow, it's possible and all that. So they find out how he did, and then there's a trying, and then within some time, then everybody's distributing big books. Big books means anything other than a BTG. Yeah, but he was able to do Gita's, Bhagavatam, like that. And no one could do that before. You know, maybe, you know, even small books I don't think they were doing. So that was something special that he had done, right? So Krishna gave him the intelligence. He was sincere. Krishna gave the intelligence. He did it. Everybody then copied it. I remember once also, who was talking? I think Bhavananda was talking, that there was, because, you know, everybody likes halava. But then they had a problem, is that it was expensive, you know? And so not all temples could do it, but then someone figured out how to make halava so it came out with the same flavor using a particular oil. Like that. So if a temple didn't have enough to get ghee, they could use that oil. Or let's say they were doing, let's say, prasad distribution, like for Rath Yatra. You know, for the Sunday feast, they would use the ghee, but for those big, big programs, they'd use this oil. I don't remember what the oil was, but whatever it was, is it had a neutral enough flavor that it didn't, you know, you got the taste of the you know, everything else. So it was good. And so that was also like a revolution in the system. So like that, they would just copy. So someone comes up, one person can do it, then everybody, okay, let's do that. Instead of, I can't do it. You know, in other words, if we went by the modern thing, that means everybody in ISKCON can't do it. One guy can do it. There's something wrong with it. So you can see it's exactly opposite of what it used to be. Right? And so either there has to be a transcendental reason that things have switched opposite, or it has to be, you know, the modes of nature. And we know which mode switches things opposite. Right? So, does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. If somebody can do it, why can't... I mean, there are devotees who go out and make devotees. Why doesn't everybody just follow that? Oh, you can't do that. No, but they're doing it. Oh, you can't do it in our place. Living entities are living entities. You know? Oh, well, they're from this community. Yeah, but half of America is from that community. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that everybody's everywhere, so you can do it. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that Krishna karma means that I'm doing it to please Krishna, therefore I'm getting the spiritual result. Does that make sense? Yes. So, how are the doubts?
Going away slowly. Okay. But if we reverse...
If you reverse.
For example, we do the primary activity, like chanting, direct.
Okay, well, I was just somehow or other got the vision of you driving backwards. And I was just wondering if you were singing while you were doing it or not. Or so. Okay, so.
Probably.
Okay.
But if we are chanting, so it's
yes.
direct activity.
Yes,
switching
yes.
to the point of Krishna karma
right.
and consciousness mixed.
Right.
And still, because we commit tens of offense, it's the name is pure,
mm-hmm.
but we are as secondary, not pure. So, how is Krishna karma going to work on that?
Because why are you chanting?
God knows why. Trying to please Krishna.
Okay, so trying to please Krishna. So that's the whole point. That's your actual final intent. So all these other things are in between, because we put our final goal as pleasing Krishna. Therefore, any mixes of karma and jnana which are on the way aren't the main point. Right? For a karmi, they're chanting Hare Krishna with the idea that they'll go to the heavenly planets. The Mayavadis are chanting Hare Krishna with the idea they'll go to Brahman. Like that. Is that understood? So, the point is, since it's our final, but it doesn't mean that in between we don't have some other things. So as those get purified, then that goes away. We come to better and better chanting. So that's why we keep chanting, because our reason for chanting is to please Krishna. And that's why we say all these others, the sahajyas, this, that, they're chanting. What's the point? What's the use? Because it's not about pleasing Krishna. So what benefit they'll get? You understand? They hear us chanting, then they'll get benefit. But them chanting, they're not going to get any benefit. You know what I'm saying? They take part in our chanting, then they'll get benefit. But I'm saying, they do their own kirtan on their own, they're not, how what benefit they'll get? Because the chit potency is not there. Right? So, I think that aspect of Nama Bas, where you have the words in words that if Rama's in something, then you get some benefit. Mm-hmm. They'll get that because they're chanting, but the point is because they're actually being offensive while they're chanting, so how much benefit will get? Well, the common person is saying these different aspects, they're not being offensive. They're not chanting in love of God either. Right? But that's why it said it's pure, because it doesn't have some other purpose to it. The word is just being said from a neutral point. Like Ajamil. Right? So Ajamil is not chanting because of... He's just saying Narayan. Right? So even though he doesn't even know it's the Lord, he's just saying it in that neutral state. And then from previous training, then he remembers. Does that work? So that's why then the process works. We are just analyzing it so that we understand what is pure and what's not. But the point is still devotional service that we're performing then is going to be considered nice. Because generally you could say technically pure comes from at the stage of nishta. It can come earlier. But you'd say in general means at nishta it should be pure. Or it is, you know, what we call, it means 75%, we'll call that pure. It's predominant. Before that, someone may be on the pure platform or not. You understand? So, but we count it within devotional service and it's progressive. So that means someone on Shraddha who has so many desires and so much distraction is still advancing because their final intent is to please Krishna, though they may want all kinds of things in between. I said, but it's going to take them there. So as they give up that needs of those things in between, then the process goes quicker. But the process still moves forward. That's why the importance of the association of devotees in the parampara. Then everything moves very nicely. But if it's without that, then what's the chance? They're not in contact with the chit potency. They don't know what's the standard. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like you could probably say, on a daily basis, probably the Mayavadis at Guru Vayur chant more Hare Krishna Kirtan in a day than we do as individuals. You know, if you take overall, I mean, a guy's in the 24-hour Kirtan, okay. But as part of the temple program, they do 3 hours every night, straight Hare Krishna Kirtan for 3 hours every day. Like that. And that's in the evening, so I'm not sure about the other elephant processions. But that's the main one. It goes for 3 hours. But the other ones, I think, are very quick. I think there's 5 of them in a day. So whether they chant at those times, or they do, then throw in another hour or so. But that's just Hare Krishna. Right? They're not seeing anything else. So they're doing so much, but their goal is not Krishna at all. Right? They're impersonalists. So then they won't get that benefit. They'll get purified from chanting the name like that, but it's not going to function in his position as Bhagavan. Yes.
On that point, just a side question. If we participate in their kirtan, would it be beneficial or the opposite?
Means we'll be chanting and so we're fine. Like that, but unless you're chanting really loud and they all can hear your kirtan, which they may or may not like, so then, you remember the Lord, you chant, you remember the Lord, the deity's there, so you, for us it's just devotional service and kirtan, but for them it's just a preliminary process to get to the impersonal Brahman. So that's what we're saying, they follow the same processes as us. But they're not devotees. That's why in the Apasampradayas, they're counted in there. Is that? Yeah.
Okay. This deity of Guru Vairappan is worshipped by Mayavadis.
The worship is set by Shankaracharya.
And they all are Mayavadis over there?
That I know of. Maybe there's some who are less Mayavadis, but we're going to the temple, we don't care. But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily all Mayavadis, but it's known as a Mayavadi seat. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, how many are devotees or not, I'm not sure. But the worship is established by him, Shankaracharya. But the worship in Jagannath Puri is also established by him. But they're devotees. There's just they use the padati that he gave, but there's the padati and the philosophy. So you might know some individuals, but that I know of, it's their, you know, are they Shris? Are they Madhvas?
No.
Yeah, so that means they're Shankarites. Because in South you only have those three, right? You don't have Babas down there, right?
No.
All the South Indian Babas all come up north. Otherwise, in the South, nobody cares, right? Okay. Yeah, you have to be Sampradayak down there. Okay? Yeah. So I would think they would be connected to Sringeri. Okay. Okay. Of course, some statements also indicate the opposite. Yato vacha nivartante aprapya manasa saha. The Lord cannot be expressed by words, not being comprehended by the mind. Such statements, however, mean that the low-minded cannot comprehend the mind, the Lord at all, and that the knowers of the truth cannot know the Lord completely. Right? That makes sense. So those who understand they're on the platform of Vijnanamoya can know the Lord to some degree, but not completely. And those who are lower than that, then they can't comprehend at all. Said? Yeah? Moreover, the Lord is called Prana Sharira, possessing a body of prana, because he controls prana. Others say that he is so called because his body is as dear to the devotees as their lives. Statements like, so that's it, we can see as the Acharyas can take these statements of the Vedanta Sutra and take them right through to Braja Bhakti. Right. Others, okay. Statements like aprano hyamana, the Lord is without prana or the mind, Mundaka Upanishad 2.12, mean that his knowledge does not depend on a mind, or that he has no material mind, because it is also said manovan, the Lord has a mind. And footnote 19. This passage is quoted in Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary on Bhagavad Gita 3.15 and in Jiva's Sarva Samvadini. Buddhi mano ga pratyangavatam bhagavato lakshya mahe buddhiman mano van anga pratyangavan.